Welcome back to the Cattle Call. This is your host, Curtis Oldie. Today's episode is run a little bit late, but we're going to talk about that because all of us are pretty busy. And with my guest coming in here, I'm going to let him come in right now, Mr. Jordan Vandermolen. Jordan, thanks for taking the time and sharing your story with us a little bit. So how are you doing today?
Great. You know, it's one of those things. I apologize. We're kind of a week behind schedule when I said I was hoping to be able to do this and really looking forward to it. But it has been calving season galore around here. And it's like we're finally maybe at a little bit of a lull where we've only had four calves a day so a guy can break free and do these things.
Yeah, we're not dealing with rain, and we've kind of that cold snap that we had there a few weeks ago was broke. We're not dealing with that and everything that challenges that come with it. So get a little breathing room here.
Absolutely. I know, like it right after Denver there when we got home, you know, we got that negative 30, and then we actually got 30 inches of snow. So it was absolutely brutal, and nothing was froze underneath. So you can about imagine how much of a mud station it was. And we're finally getting pretty well dried out. You know, there's a few of them big snow piles still sitting there about 3 foot tall now that we're 15 foot tall, but we're pretty much bare ground and everything's going a lot better and a lot more manageable.
Yeah. For our listeners, we're going to record this. It's Thursday, the 8th here, February. And you were talking about that cold snap. I don't think we got 30 inches, but we probably had a good 10 or 12 inches of snow. And we were just like you. There was no frozen ground underneath it. And then once you went through that snow, it was nothing but mud and insulated. So it made things pretty tough there for Lisa's only last, I think, around our area is just over a week versus that 3 week we had in 2020, which was a nightmare for me. But I'll take that over any time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know, like, even, you know, where we're from here in central Iowa, we maybe get a foot of snow all winter long. So to get 30 inches in one deal was pretty catastrophic for a lot of things that just it wasn't the normal for us. So road graders were a challenge, and it wasn't their fault, but it's just everything just got – we got hammered, and it took about 5 days for even the maintainers to come down our gravel road. I know I went to about all the neighbors within about a four-mile radius and got everybody at least one-lane road opened up to at least the highway so they could get to town.
Well, before we get too carried away here talking, let's introduce everybody to who you are, and why don't you give everybody a little description of where you are, introduce your family there a little bit, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, no. So we're located at Pella, Iowa, where me and my wife and son Brexton and Trice is 5 and Brexton is now 2. Very busy operation with about 250 cows and owner and operators of JVM Cattle Company. So kind of graduated college in 2009 at Kirkwood Community College. And then from there, got into the cows shortly thereafter on a small scale and has kind of blossomed into what we have now, I guess you would say. So my wife works a full-time job at home. The boys definitely keep us on our toes. And, you know, it's a team effort around here. I got one thing I've always been fortunate of even if we're going to shows or whatever, is I have some of the best, most of the time, free labor for me of friends and family that want to go to these things and celebrate good times with us. I guess maybe I pay for their meals and their fuel mileage to get there, but at least I don't have to pay them a daily wage to come and hang out and be a part of the club, I guess you would say. So very fortunate. The people I have around us at this ranch, it's just phenomenal how much they support us. I started, you know, like I said, in 2009, I always helped my grandfather out, Grandpa Marty Vandermolen, helped him out as a young kid. And then he kind of made me go out on my own a little bit, if you would say, and he wasn't too keen on me going and buying some cows. And he said, if I was going to do it, he wasn't going to be a part. I shouldn't say he's not going to be a part of it, but he wanted to do it on my own terms. And so I went out and bought some cows and brought them back to the home place here. And then about 3 years later, he let me buy into the herd that we already had. And then we've kind of maximized it about 300% because it used to be about 75 and we're running about 250 now. So,
okay. Well, for our listeners, maybe kind of give them an idea about where Pella, Iowa is, in for the country anyway, and break down Iowa anyway.
Yeah. So, Des Moines is basically in the dab middle of everything, and Interstate 80 runs all the way through Iowa, east to west. And Des Moines right in the dab middle, and we are an hour east of Des Moines. We're 15 minutes south of I-80. So it's about 45 minutes east of Des Moines and then 15 minutes south. But that's kind of about where we are, is just a little bit east of central Iowa.
Yep. So. No, and we were talking about, being busy. And actually, before we get into that, one real quick thing. Like I said, we're recording this. I actually got the NFL Honors program on my TV here as we're recording this. Super Bowl's coming up. Who's your team?
Oh, it's funny you mentioned that. I am actually a huge San Francisco 49er fan and an even bigger Iowa State fan. And my wife is a diehard Kansas City Chief fan. So if you followed even a little bit, Brock Purdy was the quarterback at Iowa State. And he was obviously the mystery irrelevant coming out of that draft with the last pick. And so that's kind of my favorite college team coming to my favorite pro team. And it's been a fun roller coaster to watch this season. I think if the Niners can hold off, if the Niners defense comes to play, I think it's going to be a Niners win. But if they can't stop Kansas City, it could get really ugly really quick, because if that train gets on the tracks, it's hard to keep it off.
Yeah. So who's going to be rooting the loudest there, though? Is it going to be you or your wife? And who are the boys rooting for?
So the biggest, honestly, the biggest problem is we're going to be at Beef Expo this weekend for Red Angus weekend. And our sale is 2:00 on Sunday. And my wife is the secretary treasurer, and she has to be clerk that sale. So I told her, I said, well, let's just hope we have an empty trailer coming on the way home. We don't have to bring any of the animals back. Sometimes bull guys are like, hey, can you bring them home for a month? We'll come pick them up in a month. Hopefully come back in an empty trailer. And if we have to, we got to stop at somewhere in Des Moines and watch the game. So, but obviously my oldest boy, Trice, that's actually how he got his name, is from the football stadium in Ames, which is Jack Trice Stadium. That's how we actually got his first name. So,
okay.
He always favors mother, so they're probably rooting for the Chiefs, but I can take as much heat as anybody, so I'll be rooting my Niners on hard.
All right. Well, you had talked about Denver. We actually were in Denver together. You were judging one of the shows I was watching, and I actually was considering talking to you about sitting down real quick in Denver and recording this then, which I didn't tell you that until now, but we were talking before we started recording about how down in the yards that first week that arena got so dusty, and I think you're probably okay, but I couldn't believe how choked up I was from eating that dust, and I would have thought for sure you would have been in some bad shape. I think you were coughing a little bit there or needing to get a drink of water, because I think I reached over to talk to your wife or your dad and said he might need a bottle of water, but they thought you had one in your pocket there. But that's kind of where we all started this, and here, like I said, I went down to Tucson, Tallahassee, and I actually want to give a shout out real quick. I was down in Tallahassee, and it was during NCBA week. And for anybody that follows me on Facebook, I shared a deal 11 years ago. I took a team down, and they won the youth activities judging contest down there. But I had opportunity to ride back on the plane with Troy Marshall with the Angus Association. So anybody that knows Troy, he's the director of communications and industry relations, and maybe he's listening. So it was good talking with you, Troy. So, but yeah, lots of things going on here. So let's, you were talking about your grandpa earlier. So let's just kind of jump into, give us a little background on your grandpa. Is he always in that Pella area? And then kind of talk maybe a little bit about his interest in getting into the cattle and the breed that he got into, because we were kind of involved with that. And then also should I let everybody know, we'll talk about here probably a little bit, but you're kind of following up behind Jacqueline Wilson, who you've got some pass with. So maybe we can talk about that a little bit. But let's talk about your grandpa and his background and getting into the cattle business.
Absolutely. So my grandfather, Marty Vandermolen, and my grandma's Betty, they were the owner-operators of Marbet Farms out of Selly, which is literally 15 minutes north of where I live here. And I actually bought where we live at my Pella here, the Pella address. This is actually where my grandpa grew up. I live in the house where my grandpa grew up in as a child, and it's just a small farmhouse. But that's where my grandpa and his brother and five sisters grew up in this house. But grandpa actually was one of the first six people to take South Devons into North America here in the United States in 1973. So, that's kind of where the roots started, I guess you would say. And then it kind of blossomed from there. And grandpa was very busy in the South Devon breed, trying to support it and just trying to get it along in the States. And, you know, I'm 34 now. I was born in 89. So I came a little bit later after all that, but, I guess you could say at a young age, I was all in on the cattle, and I don't think I've slowed down since. I guess me and my wife are very fortunate that we are able to be in the best industry in the world, and that is the cattle industry, and absolutely love every minute of it. So I guess I helped my grandpa at a young age starting out, and then just kind of got hooked into it. And then eventually he kind of let me in on it. And, you know, my grandpa is one of the biggest, I'm going to say the most silent supporter probably I'll ever have. You know, he's one of them guys that, you probably know him a little bit. I know Jacqueline, I'm sure, could probably definitely tell you some stories back in the day, because she was a little older than me. So she would have been a junior, when the South Devon Junior Show was just coming in. My grandpa was running at president for the National Association there. And since then, I've been on the board a few years now running. And I just, you know, the people in the South Devon breed, I just can't, it's a family, you know. Your kids were very involved growing up. I know Taylor was just a couple years younger than me, but I know you guys got to dabble in the South Devons a little bit. And on your podcast with Jacqueline, I heard her talk about, you guys talk about Jim and Mary Brown. I bought a lot of genetics from them over the past 10 years. And Jacqueline, I've actually bought a lot of cows from her. One of the OG cows, I guess you would say, I bought some for her in 2012. I bought a potload of heifer calves that I turned as breads and then kept the top end. Today was that cow milks too good and her udder is getting too big on me. And that was still one of the OGs that was still around. We're going to have to ship her here as a 12 model, but she's turning 12 years old. But, you know, it's really fun. I guess the funnest thing for me in the cattle industry is just getting to meet the people along the way. It just makes it all worth it. No matter where you're at and what you're doing, they're the best people in the country, and I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, well, why don't you expand a little bit? You're going to be the third person I've had on here now that's had South Devon. You know, Dar was about just short of a year ago. Jacqueline talked about it a little bit, but maybe kind of talk about the South Devon breed, because it's not a real popular breed that a lot of people probably are familiar with. But maybe kind of talk just a little bit about that breed, and then we'll move on from there.
Absolutely. So, you know, the South Devons as a whole, you know, we talked about the people being just like a family, but the cattle, you know, I think Mr. Nichols, that passed away just here a few weeks ago, said that South Devons was the best kept secret in the best kept secret in the cattle industry. And I couldn't agree with them more. You know, they're good doing mama cows. Like, they're very functional. There's a lot of longevity in them. Just the temperament of the cows is extremely well. They hold their body condition. They have great feet, good udders, good milk, raise a good calf. They're just a low, very, very low maintenance cow that still has a lot of things to offer a lot of guys. And a lot of guys are buying bulls from us for just crossbreeding them to throw some heterosis in their cow herd just because they need something else in there. And they just love and then also, you know, the nice thing about South Devons is the carcass traits that comes along with it. So it's kind of one of them things that they maybe aren't as flashy as the Angus and, you know, things of that nature, fancy wise, but I always tell guys, you know, the red ones are kind of like a cross between Gelvie and Red Angus, and that's about the best way I can describe the red ones. And then they can be red or black. So, but they kind of, they're a little bit fancier than Gelvies, I would say, or limousines. And then they're probably not just quite as fancy as your normal traditional Angus cat.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the biggest thing that a lot of people probably don't realize is they are an English breed. And early on, they were considered the giants of the English breeds, but that has all kind of changed over years of selection and so forth. And one of the things that, and maybe I missed it, but what made your grandpa Marty want to get into that South Devon breed?
You know, that is a darn good question. And I have never got to ask them that. You know, my grandpa's still around, and I mean, he comes around the ranch multiple times a day this time of year just to see what's going on. And it's kind of funny that, you know, he's one of those guys that will never say good job or never, you know, like say, tell your feeling. He's not a feeling type of guy, but he'll be the first one there. If I need something, I can call and he'll be there, and vice versa as that aspect. But, you know, he's also very, he wants to be a part of it, and he doesn't want to see anything get failed. So he's always been a huge supporter. I guess you could say a silent supporter, because he doesn't say good job or like congratulations or anything like that. But I know, you know, he's also the first one to go to the coffee shop and brag about every bit of success we've ever had. When we, if we do have success, he's the first one to tell the town about it and, yep, you know, boast about it. He never gave me the gratification of saying that, but that's perfectly fine. You know, me and my grandpa have a great relationship. And I'm blessed to be as close to him as I am. You know, he's getting up there in age, little 82 or 83 years old now. And you will not get him out of that corn planter in the springtime, and you will not get him out of that combine in the fall time. So, you know, he's still being able to do it. If I needed cow chores done, he would still do them. So to be 80 some years old and still be able to do that stuff is, to me, phenomenal. And it's really cool to see him. He really spoils my boys. So, for them to have that relationship to understand, I mean, Trice is old enough now, he's going to be 6 in the April, but he definitely always talks about grandpa in the highest regards all the time. So, but it's really cool. You know, like I said, he brought them over in 73, and I don't know why he did, but he was a huge supporter of it. And, you know, we talked about the traditional South Devons. They were the gentle giants, is what they said. And I guess I'll tell a quick story about grandfather. There was a discrepancy with the bull they showed back in the day. And when I said the gentle giants, like them cows were 1800 to 2000 pound cows and had calves in the 150s, 160 pound range. And his biggest claim to fame, when them animals were 1 year old, they would put up a 1400 pound steer to hang a carcass and be ready at 1 year old. And there's not a lot of breeds of cattle that can do that anymore. You know, very, very few that can be ready to go in 12 months to slaughter. But grandpa, they were having a board meeting about a bull that they were, he tells a story of, they were hoping to get the bull kicked out because his birth weight was so dang big and they wanted to change the breed so they weren't so big. And this is a true story. And I'm sure Dar has heard this story. Grandpa told the story at Denver. He actually went to Denver last year for the first time in 20 years, probably been there. But they went through the kitchen of a hotel, and that meeting they were in was on the top floor of a hotel. And he went through the kitchen into the commercial elevator with this animal, with this bull. And he was a 2,700 pound bull. He actually won the Super Bowl contest, the Iowa State Fair, for the biggest bull. But he actually put that bull on the elevator through the kitchen of a hotel, went to the top floor, went right into that meeting room. And they actually had to, the hotel, it was a lock and key meeting they had. They were pretty serious about stuff back in the day. And they got the hotel to unlock the door. He strutted that bull right around that conference room, went right back on the elevator and went back home, and they never said a word to nobody about anything.
Huh.
So it was one. Yeah. It's kind of a crazy, crazy thing. Can you imagine something even remotely close to that happening in today's world?
Yeah, no, I remember, there's a lot of stories I hear about Cow Palace and sales and you know, penthouses and stuff like that. And I believe in Denver, they still go to the Brown Hotel, but no, that's quite the story there.
Nope. So, but no, Grandpa, I mean, he's loyal to a fault. I mean, he's one of those guys that don't talk about emotions, but he's also the one that is probably the most caring individual you ever meet. So he's a wonderful, wonderful man. And I am blessed to call him my grandfather.
Well, that's cool. And it's also great that your boys get to spend time with him as well.
Absolutely.
So let's kind of move on. So you grew up in the South Devon breed and you kind of played around with the club calf business. Maybe talk about that a little bit. And is that something you're still doing?
Well, we're pretty diversified, I guess you would say, on breeds of cattle around here. We actually have a couple Charolais. We got a few Simmentals, a few Angus, a few Maines, a few Keys, got a couple Shorthorns. I guess I've always said that good cattle are good cattle. I don't care what the breed or color or shape and size. If they're good, I'm not going to be afraid to own them. And then about 4 years ago, we were blessed to a gentleman came to us and wanted to know if we would want to get on a business venture with him in the Red Angus breed. And that has kind of blossomed a lot bigger and quicker than we ever imagined, but we're running about 50 Red Angus cows now.
Okay.
So
what kind of got you interested in going with Red Angus?
You know, I've always been really intrigued with the breed, because they're very high quality cattle. And, you know, I have a soft, it's really hard, especially in the Devons. You know, we show quite a bit and sell a lot of bulls and breeding stock. And I've always said it's easier to make a black one, and it's really hard. It's a lot harder to make a great red one. And so I was determined in the red breed, you know, if I could pick on the red breed a little bit, I thought they had more of a feet issue about 4 years ago, and the breed trending is coming back to where it needs to be, I believe. But I just thought there was a lot of upside in the breed. That's still a family breed with great people, and the cattle are phenomenal. And it's just another thing that we can kind of venture on in. And, you know, the worst part of the greatest thing about the South Devons is, you know, it's a small family breed, but the worst problem is you can only sell so many of them a year. And so we kind of just had to diversify a little bit for the simple fact, just to try to create some more revenue with the quantity of cows that we wanted to do. And we just thought the Red Angus had the most upside potential of anything. And actually, the reason we got into the Reds, the biggest reason is, I don't know if you know James Red Angus out of Searsboro. You know, the probably Wallace, Tammy Wallace,
yep,
that's married to Ernie there. So her original maiden name is James. So we actually bought out her mom and dad's herd.
Okay.
So they were doing a herd dispersal, and we bought all the cows in one big group and got the pastures along with it. So, and that's about 20 minutes away, and that's kind of how we started the Reds. And then we've picked and choosed a little bit of more top breeding stock to put in that herd.
Yeah. No, that's probably the biggest challenge. I don't know if it matters where you are in the country, but finding pasture ground, because, you know, I don't know that you're quite as urban, but all these towns are growing, and, you know, we lose more pasture land around where I'm at. Just this monster of Kansas City and all the suburbs keep growing, and they keep putting subdivisions in, and trying to find grass just about anywhere has been a struggle. So that's certainly key when you can put a package together with the cows and the grass.
Yes. We're not so much of an urban problem here as just the high land prices because of the corn and soybeans. We're in, yeah, that belt of, you know, where farm ground's going for $15,000 to $20,000 an acre on the normal. And, you know, it's tough. I mean, we're spending $5,000 an acre for grass, just for pasture ground. On the high end, it's normally that four range, but we're having to get $5,000 for that. And even pasture rent is up to $150 an acre for a lot of pasture. The nicest thing is where we live is we can about go, you know, one cow per 1.5 to 2 acres on a normal year. So that's where we're blessed. You know, the grass is very, very hardy grass, and it grows well. And on a good year, I know we had a drought year last year, it was a little tougher, but, you know, normally we can go at least one cow per 1.5 acres on a normal given year. And that's a lot of things, you know, it's tough to, it's a lot tougher for, you know, the surrounding states and regions to be able to do that. So we're blessed to be able to do that. So, but you know, you got a 50 acre pasture. That's a huge pasture around here.
Yeah. So, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, it's interesting as you go across the country, you go further west from me, you know, we got the Flint Hills and out there are things in sections or even more than sections. And, close to me here, you know, a big pasture would probably be in that 30, 40 acres. There's some that are probably quarters, but, very few just cause you know, a lot more population density, but you get up your way in that farm country. It's kind of similar to some of the stuff in Nebraska where, you know, everything's running in row crop or irrigated ground and very limited pastures just because of the value of it. So.
Absolutely.
So let's kind of move on. You'd mentioned Iowa Beef Expo. So what do you got going on at the Iowa Beef Expo?
So this weekend is sale weekend and next week's junior weekend. So basically it's a consignment sale. Each breed has their own sale. There's Angus. I hope I don't miss anything here. I'll try to rinse them off real quick. There's Angus, Charolais, Maines, Simmentals, Red Angus. There's 11 breed sales there this weekend. And then there's Herefords as well. But there's 11 breeds there, that sell. So like we'll go in tomorrow morning and set stuff up and we'll have a show on Saturday and of just sale cattle and that the results of that show, how well you do in that kind of gives you our sale order for Sunday. So we actually have two bull calves and a heifer calf that we're pretty high up on. This year we're pretty excited because I think it's bar none the best set we've ever brought. I think that female is way good and them bulls have a lot of good attributes that a lot of the purebred producers can grab a hold onto and, you know, breed a program around. So we're pretty excited to get that. I'm actually on the Beef Breeds board. So we're kind of involved in it on the planning side of things too. So yeah, it's a really fun place to be. Sale cattle are really good there. It's been one of those things. Actually, my grandfather was one of the first people that started the Iowa Beef Expo. So okay. That's another fact for you. So, but.
Well, let's, since you're going to be going in this weekend. Why don't you just give you a little spotlight here? Maybe talk about your offering. Are they all out of the same sire? And I think you've got a herd sire that I think is kind of putting your program there on the map. And maybe talk about him a little bit and some of the offering you got there. And we'll give a little sale talk here.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. We were blessed when I got into the Red Angus breed. My biggest thing is I don't like to create unnecessary work. So I've always been the firm believer that I want to own some of the best bulls in the breeds. That way I don't have to AI as much. And our goal was to try to find the best John Wick son that we could find in the Red Angus breed. John Wick's a sire that's very rare. His semen is almost $3,000 a straw if you can find it. And it's one of those things that I was blessed 3 years ago up to, we went to Yankton, South Dakota for a sale that Niobrara Red Angus put on. And Garrett Knebel is kind of their farm manager, marketing director, I would say. And then the herd manager there is Jacob Bathke. And I've got to know both of those gentlemen really, really well. Just great, great people. And but we bought a bull called Prestige out of there. And that bull has put us on the map about as quick as any probably individual or animal could in a short amount of time for us to put us on the roadmap just of success because he is super, super consistent. I honestly believe he's the best John Wick son on the market. And that dude is a breeding machine. His cattle are consistent. You know, we talk about sire groups anymore being hard to come by of consistency. And that dude just flat out gets it done and they don't come big. They're that 70, 80 pound birth weight coming out and them things are the vigorous calves ever. And the thing that I love the most is, you know, I'm a cow guy. So I love a good looking mama with good feet and good udders. And his females are just coming into production. We've had four of them, first calf heifers calf out of him. And they're just absolutely knockout flawless, just knockout cows that very, very exciting to have. But yeah, as you said, all three of them are prestige shuns. We got a couple other bulls that we're going to be trying to run, but we haven't had any calf crop out of them yet. So this is kind of our main herd sire's prestige, and he's getting a lot of starting to get a little bit of recognition on the national level, and some of them calves out of him are hitting the show ring and doing extremely well for other people. And I was at the right place, the right time to get that bull, and it has been a fun ride the last couple of years with him.
No, I've always been a John Wick fan, and I just looked up, they're selling some semen online. It's at $24.75 at the moment. So that's a lot of money for a straw semen, but it just tells you kind of the demand and interest in those John Wick and John Wick sons. So
absolutely. Nope. And, you know, Niobrara, where I got him from is, you know, like I said, we've become pretty good buddies, and we actually just purchased some cows from them here recently, and bought another bull last year from them. I'm running all three of my Red Angus herd sires are all from them. I got a heifer bull that I got from them as well. And then we got another resource son that is out of a cow. The Wood family ends up winning Denver and OKC a couple of years last year at OKC in Denver. And I have a full sib to that female that is one of our herd sires. So that's one of the ones coming. So, but great people out there. And heck, we've even got as close to them now that I'm shearing all their bulls and their cows for their cow sale with a group of us. So,
okay. Yeah, I know that heifer that Logan's dragging is a resource daughter. So that's another great one you got there as well. So,
no.
So let's, anything else you want to share about the Red Angus sale there at the Iowa Beef Expo? And
it is Sunday. The sale starts Sunday at 2:00. I'm thinking there's like 45 live lots, and then there's about 20 genetic lots. We're actually selling the first. I finally got some CSS certified sex semen on Prestige collected. So we're going to be selling the first sex semen on that bull there as well in that sale. So pretty excited about that opportunity to get him CSS certified. As many of you know, it's kind of a pain in the rear, if you would, get that thing going to being over 100 days sitting in a controlled environment doing those tests to get him qualified to make that semen. And so we're pretty excited to be able to finally get that project behind us. So, but no, we're very looking forward to this weekend. Great people that come to Des Moines. And actually, it's kind of funny. We've been doing it for this is our fourth year, and I've had three return customers that come to the expo. And one gentleman, a close family friend, and the people are just awesome. And I don't want to name blast them because I don't want to put them on the spot, but they are some of the best people I've ever met. And every year he just says, I don't care what anybody else is selling, but what do you got? So, and every year I think he puts a bid in on every animal we've ever brought up there and puts a floor on them. So, he's pretty generous to us and a great, great family to support our program.
Well, those are good customers to have.
Absolutely.
That's kind of you also do something that's interesting, and this is something I believe, if I remember right, you do with your dad. So maybe kind of share one of your hobbies.
Well, I think you're talking about race cars, aren't you?
Yeah. Or did you retire from that?
Well, I retired from that. I always told people I have the two worst and most expensive hobbies in the world, and that is showing cows and racing cars. So I loved it. Racing was a blast. I mean, it's one of those things that it's all summer long. The most unfortunate part is you're wrecking the car every weekend, and you got to do the three or four nights a week to fix it, to get it ready to wreck it again for every weekend. And it's just one of those things that's a huge time commitment. And, you know, we weren't getting stuff done at home how I wanted to in the cattle. And it was a huge time commitment. So I've actually bowed out a little bit of it, but in the heat of the moment, I got my dad and my brother suckered into it a little bit. So they're still going strong. And every once in a while, last year, my dad let me run his car. I begged him to let me run his car one night, and I may have rolled that thing twice in the same night. So I don't know if he's ever going to let me use that car again, but we sure had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, no, I remember you guys doing that, and I occasionally see some pictures come across. So I don't know. And I think the only thing that might be more expensive is maybe showing horses, but
Right. No.
it's all expensive. So.
Absolutely. No, but it's a blast. I mean, it was a really fun time, and I kind of still feel a little bit bad on getting dad involved in it, getting him hooked, and then basically getting out of it all at the same time. But he's had a blast and he loves it, and me and my dad have a great relationship. My dad's a heck of a man, and he's one the person that I really look up to in my life. So my mentors in my life have definitely scoped us to who we need to be, and I'm very, very glad to have the family backing me and who we've had along the years, because we've had nothing but self-promotion, I guess you would, by them. And anything we do, my family has always been 100% involved in making everything work and improvements and things that, not necessarily financially, but always been there on our corner to support us. So great, great, great people to be raised by and call family. Very proud of my family.
No, family's the foundation, and it's a little bit of a struggle if you don't have them to help get you through, and sometimes correct you if you're heading the wrong path, but they're always usually in your back corner there supporting you and helping you out whenever can.
Absolutely.
Well, as we kind of wrap this up, Jordan, you're going to be down. If anybody's wanting to look you up, you'll be down at the Iowa Beef Expo this weekend, and then maybe if they want to try to get a hold of you and find out more about whether it's South Devon or the Red Angus or some of the other breeds you mentioned, what's the best way that they can find out more about JVM cattle and reach out to you?
Well, I'm one of those old school guys that I like talking on the phone probably more than I need to. I'm not much of an emailer, but my cell phone number, I give it to anybody. So here, I guess if you don't mind, I'll give my cell phone number out there if you
Sure.
don't mind.
So
My cell.
they're going to be ones calling you, so.
Nope, absolutely. It don't matter who calls me. I love to talk to anybody about cattle or anything in life. I just really enjoy it, But my cell phone number is 641 521 9917. Anybody can reach out to me there. We also have a Facebook page that we do quite a bit on, probably not as much as we should. And I guess if you really want the raw content of what goes on around the place, I'm quite, people tell me I'm quite active on Snapchat, and I'm not going to say it's the most politically correct in every aspect of life, but if you want to see some daily humor slash, you might think you have a bad day, but I might be able to show you just a little bit worse day sometimes. We just put it all out there on Snapchat, and we got quite the following there with, like I said, with cattle people, whatever you meet across the road. It's amazing how many states and different people. On a given day, I have 2,500 people look at my Snapchat on a daily basis. So it's pretty insane the people I've got to meet over just a stupid little social media blog. But it's been a lot of fun. It's been a fun ride. You meet a lot of good people along the way. So those are about the three easiest ways. But I'm a little old school. Like I said, a conversation goes with me a long ways on the phone. So whether it be text or a phone call, and most of the time I'd rather just talk on the phone with somebody.
What's
So,
your Snapchat handle if you anybody wants to look you up?
That's a good question. Jordan JVM is what it is, I believe. I'll have to look. I gotta look that up a sec. I
Yeah,
don't,
I know my kids are on Snapchat. It's something I never got into because I have a hard enough time just keeping up with the book of faces. So.
Right. Nope. Yes, it is. It's just Jordan JVM. So, but yeah, it's one of those things you can put it on there within seconds and, kind of tell a story. And, I guess I use it as more of a just help. You can little knick-knacky things that you see or do that, can help somebody else out. And, I guess I don't want to get too deep into this, but, the biggest thing for me is, what people don't talk about as much is just the mental health side of being involved in the industry that we're in. There's the highs and the lows, and, a lot of guys have told me, you know what, when I'm having a bad day, all I gotta do is open that thing, and maybe you're having a really crappy day and you're still got a smile on your face and just moving forward with it. And it's like, hey man, you know, things happen. It's not always freaking sunshine and rainbows, but we still got to move on and go to the next one. So just make the most of it. So,
yeah, no, it's interesting you brought that up because you probably don't know, but I am in the process of putting together a foundation for mental health and suicide awareness and kind of a platform for that. So I'll maybe reaching back out to you, but waiting for the legal to get done, but it's going to be strong hands and stronger minds. So as soon as that gets finalized, I've already got some of the, like I said, I'm waiting to, for the lawyers to finish up getting that finalized. And then, like I said, we'll have a platform and provide some of those resources because, yeah, there is a lot of people going through here. First of year, your cabin, you know, just there's always something going on these farms and ranches that can, you know, take a guy or a gal, woman to their knees. And so it's a very stressful environment that we live in, and we got to find ways to work together and help each other out and get through it.
Absolutely. No, I'm that's cool. You're doing that. I would love to be involved with that a little bit. You know, the other day I probably had it, you know, it was last year in that polar vortex or 2020 we had whatever year that was
2020. And I'll tell you the reason that sticks out in me is I had a group of cows, get on top of a pond, go through. And that was one of those days, that was just gut wrenching. And, you know, you find ways to work through it, but when you have three donor cows anyway, go down through and you lose them just like that. The financial thing is one thing, but we do get pretty attached to these animals as well. So it can be tough.
Absolutely. You know, nobody talks about, you know, the emotional side of it, how attached we get. You know, granted, the fat cows are still a business and they got to work for us, but the emotional attachment, if somebody doesn't get emotionally attached with cattle, everybody has too much of a heart. You know, if you don't get emotionally attached, you're probably not the right people for the business. Cause no matter what you do, it will hook, line, and sinker you. Like you were talking about that. I had one that year. It was actually, we were at the Beef Expo. It was the week of the Beef Expo. It was our second sale year that there we ever had. And we were going out every hour to check. And, I missed my alarm 1 hour and went out there, and there was newborn calf right out in the mix of it outside because we don't have a big enough barn to put everything inside. And of course, you know, you can always try to put them inside a small group, and it's always going to be that one calf that calves and you didn't expect it. And yeah, within that 1 hour time period, and I think we've all probably missed an alarm during calving season. And I went out there and that calf was basically froze stiff, but it was still alive, and, you know, got that thing in the hot box and, you know, gave it a little bit of a slow warm bath and, you know, tried everything I could, and, you know, working on that calf for about an hour, hour and a half, and that thing died in my arms, and it broke me that day, man. I tell you what, it was a tough one to get through, but, you know, it's things like that that make us so emotionally involved and dedicated. And, you know, I always say the cattle people or, you know, any agriculture industry, you know, all of us love what we're doing or we wouldn't be doing it, because it is not for the faint of heart, and it is the hardest job in the world to have. And it's not an 8-to-5er, you know, it is 24/7 all year long.
Yeah, so. No, and that's kind of the story I'm hoping to tell with these episodes is, you know, we got people that are kind of removed from agriculture. If they're listening to these, us telling our story, you know, a lot of times we will go out and we'll, you know, they may look at it as, you know, it's a financial decision. You're doing this, you're doing that. But at the end of the day, a lot of us are going to, as the husbandry part kicking in, you know, we're going to put our heart and soul into it. And we're going to a lot of times do whatever it takes, knowing that we'll never recoup what we spent on an animal from going to a vet or, doing everything we can and exhausting it to try to get them to live. So
absolutely. Nope.
Well, Jordan, I want to thank you for sitting down and taking time out of your busy schedule and sharing a little bit about yourself. And, one last thing here, is there anything else you would like to share about yourself or share with anything, with our, listeners?
The one thing I guess that I we brought it up smallly there at a small level there that I have been blessed to be able to judge a lot of livestock shows. And like you said, you were going to interview me after Denver there. I got to judge the Junior Aberdeen show down there in the yards this year. And that was my first time ever judging at Denver. And, you know, it's one of those things that I think I've been judging for about 4 or 5 years now. And, you know, I went to college for beef production, but never was on the college. Kirkwood Community College, where I graduated, didn't have a judging team. But, you know, we had some really good people there. Old Bubba Chapman. Do you know Terry Chapman, old Bubba?
I don't believe I do.
Okay. No, but great individual, you know, but, you know, we talk about people we meet along the way. Old Bubba has had a really, really strong support in my life, you know, pushing me beyond the limits, and I'm getting to be on boards with him now. And, you know, but somebody when I was younger, of course, I never was in judging college or nothing like that. So Beth McDermott, you probably don't know Beth, but Beth McDermott got me coped into judging one time. And I told her, I said, Beth, I am not politically correct enough to be doing that stuff. And she's like, oh, it'll be it's a small jackpot in Iowa. So it's no big deal. Just come and do it. And I'm like, well, how many had we talking? She's like, oh, 30 or 40. And I said, oh, that won't be so bad. So maybe I will try it. So I did it. Showed up there that day, and I had 120 to talk through and evaluate. And we'll just say it was probably the most chaotic mess of listening to all day long. But, you know, since then, I absolutely love it. I mean, in a cattle industry that's given me so much in such a short amount of time, I really, really like to give back as much as we can here, whether it be, you know, being on boards and things and helping junior associations or, you know, judging livestock shows. And I guess you were ringside the other day. You know, I do the junior show a little bit different than probably most people. And I guess I'm going to flip this back to you. But, you know, one thing that I do that a lot of guys probably haven't done is, in showmanship at the end of the day, I kind of let them kids come and experience that a little bit from their own eyes, through my eyes with me. And, you know, that's been one of the coolest things I've ever got to do, is to be able to do that with other individuals and give them that spotlight back that I'm in, you know, blessed to be in the spotlight of. So, you know, we talked about it being a dusty mess down there, but, you know, this, at the end of the day, the people were still great. The cattle were great. And, you know, the showmanship is where I think just it's a lot of fun for me to evaluate showmanship with them kids.
Yeah, no, I've been around long enough I've been a superintendent where I've had people tell me that we need to get the showmanship going on so we can get to the steer show. If there's any part of the judging contest or the show that we need to spend a little more time on, it's that showmanship one, because that's where it's up to those kids. They're out there. They're going to tell you what they know about their project. They're going to show you, you know, how they can handle that animal. And I think they need to get that opportunity to have that time in the spotlight. You know, when it comes to the rest of the stuff, it just depends on, you know, you'll know when those animals come in, who's been spending time with them and who isn't. And, you know, then we get that whole story about how much money we spend on some of these animals. But that showmanship is where they kind of set themselves apart. And that's certainly where I let my kids kind of focus on and let them, cause that comes down to them. Anybody at any given day can, with whatever they've got, have the opportunity to walk away with showmanship.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's normally that kid, you know, that necessarily doesn't have the highest quality animal there, not just money wise, but, you know, but you get to meet the people through showmanship and them kids that are going to be the ones that change the industry. You know, they're the ones that are going to be the spotlight and doing the things in the future. And, you know, like you talk about your two kids in there, and, you know, I know Taylor, he's molding himself to be quite involved in the Red Angus breed now. And then, you know, he's gotten to do a few judging gigs as well. And I know that I don't even know if you know this or he knows this, but he may have a judging gig here real shortly coming up this summer, but I don't know if anybody's told him that. So maybe that I should keep that to myself, but,
no, I think he knows about that one.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Cause, I think he was shuffling, trying to figure out, you know, shows and stuff like that. And I think they were getting done with one they were going to on Thursday or Friday so that he was available on Saturday, I think is what he told me. So now he's definitely got his irons in the fire between, you know, now working for the Red Ink Association. And then he's got about half dozen juniors that he takes to different jackpot shows. And I mean, they were down at the Iowa Beef, or not the Iowa, the Kansas Classic over the weekend. They had a string down there. So a lot of those kids he works with.
Yes, no, it's fun to see, you know, I could talk myself of being an old guy, you know, so I'm aging myself a little bit. I'm only 34, but even, you know, like even your kids, I know they're a little bit younger than me, but seeing them younger kids come into the cattle industry like Taylor has, and, you know, a couple, you know, we got some, you know, what I've said is, you know, you got a couple kids in the South Devon breed, like look at Lane Geis, what he's doing with the Simmentals, you know, having a huge role there in the semis. And, you know, then you got, you know, the Dubit brothers, what they're doing for the industry, and Curtis as involved as he is, and judge and coach. And, you know, Cody's working down there for, Cody's working down there in Missouri, being a field rep for a drug company.
Yep.
So, I mean, just it's kind of funny to see them small kids come from the little South Devon breed and making an impact in the big world in the cattle industry. It's awesome.
I think that's just true testament to those junior programs and them actually, you know, and I think that's also testament to small junior programs and what they can do.
Yep.
And I'll give some kudos to Dart. You know, I talked to him. We, like I said, I shared that, you know, that we were down at NCBA for the youth activities, and I took a group of Kansas kids down there, and they, I think we had grand champion in speaking, the speech contest. The only thing I don't think they cleaned up on was the quiz bowl, but I told those four kids, if they're going down, they're going to do everything. And they did, but they actually won the, judging contest down there against all the kids in the country. And, but it was Dar who started that program with a bunch of South Devon juniors. So I don't know if you got to go down there or not, but
yes.
that was a great program. And I think little programs like that for those kids who, you know, are willing to work a little bit, they're going to get a lot out of it. And I think we need to make sure we provide those opportunities, because those are our future leaders.
Absolutely. You know, everybody wants to give, you know, kind of like my place, you know, we want to give me the spotlight or Dar the spotlight. But I think anybody can say that Lynn and, you know, my wife included, but Lynn is the, I'm going to call her the queen bee of the South Devon group and the breed of, you know, what that lady has given to our breed. She just needs kudos every day, because she has put up with a lot of stuff and supported us without any expectations of financial assistance or anything of that. She has dedicated her life to the South Devon breed. Her and Dar have, but, you know, Dar's the one that kind of gets a little bit more of the spotlight in those situations. But, you know, you talked about small breed doing big things. And, you know, the craziest thing is, you know, like in the South Devon breed, like 2 years ago at Junior Nationals, one of my stories, you know, we talk about it being a family. Everyone, it was in Manhattan, Kansas, and it was one of those days we didn't have any supper plans, and it was supper on your own. And in Manhattan, Kansas, there's a Mexican restaurant there not far from the college there where we were doing everything. We ended up renting the whole Mexican restaurant on an hour notice, and we had a party of like 140 people that showed up there. So, and all had supper together, you know, and what breeds can say they can do that and that close, you know, when somebody wins in the breed, everybody's happy for them. And that's where the biggest thing is the family aspect of the South Devons is second to none. And that's really cool to be able to see in a small breed.
Yeah, no, you get in some of the bigger shows, and I'm sure I'm going to have somebody, I'm not going to create any, fans here probably saying this, but you get a lot of silos where, you know, that's all they're there. You got individuals that are just there to show. I think Charlay, for an example, I think they said that now that those juniors have to participate in at least one more event, because we did have some juniors at one point that were flying from one junior contest to another one to show in the heifer show. And that's not what it's really about. It's about, the leadership aspect of what they're going to get out of that. And these kids networking together. And because a lot of these kids that come through these programs, whether they get into high school, they get into college, and then they get out, in their professional life, they're always networking, and it's always, you know, who you know, sometimes to get your foot in the door. So, like I said, all part of it.
No, absolutely. And that's a fun thing, you know, like we're talking the Devons, you know, in the big breeds, you got your clicks and people that are happy or, you know, things of that nature. But like the Devons this year, we had a dodgeball tournament this year at our junior nationals. And that was the, I think, probably one of the funniest things we could ever do is, and then we ended up at the end of it, you know, we kind of broke up in teams. And then at the end of it, my wife says the funnest time of her life is to be able to throw a dodgeball at her 5-year-old and let off some steam. So we did parents against the kids at the end of it. And, you know, those are memories that you just can't make up and, you know, things that are going to last a lifetime. So a lot of fun.
Yep. That they are. Well, Jordan, again, I appreciate you taking the time to sit down from your busy schedule. I'm glad you got a little break here and calving before you get the next swing coming in. But if there's nothing else, I think we'll sign off for this episode of the Cattle Call.
No, sounds good. And thank you so much for having me. And I really appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, thanks for everything you do for, you know, I know you were one of those mentors that, you know, helped us as kids and got involved. And, you know, I'm going to give you a little bit of spotlight. But Andrew, if you remember, you know, with the, like our junior nationals, you always had the Heartland Challenge, which was kind of the overall winner. And you always were the nice guy to sponsor a $100 fresh, crisp $100 bill for the individual that did that for quite a few years. So, you know, kudos to you for doing that. And, you know, the cool things that you're doing for the cattle industry is, you know, giving a voice to people that aren't normally heard is really cool for you to be able to do that. And I'm glad to be a part of it. And
well,
I just want to say thank you.
I was talking to somebody the other day, and I told them everybody's got a story. It's just some are got a better way of saying it. So, you know, and when it comes to kids, who doesn't like a crisp $100 bill?
Exactly. Nope. Exactly. So the awards are always fun, but the $100 bill, they're going to remember that more than they would the big trophy sitting in the room 6 days later collecting dust.
Yep.
So.
Nope, definitely good times. And like I said, I had the opportunity to, you know, do some stuff with that. I think, you know, I helped out with the Quiz Bowl and some other things with the South Devon breed. I did the same thing with the Leavenworth County Beef 4-H and FFAers for their beef program. So, you know, it's just part of giving it back. And I think that if we all do a little bit, then, it helps move this, big ball and momentum and keep things going.
Absolutely. And hopefully that we can get you conned in to come into the South End Junior Nationals this summer down in Kansas and maybe being a judge or two for a couple events down there as well for them. Marketing speech contest or anything of that nature. So.
Well, if things work out, I can probably handle that because I'll be probably following Logan from whatever show she's on, and sounds like that weekend's free since Taylor is. So,
perfect.
Keep in touch for that. But Jordan, again, thank you for your time, and with that, I'll sign off for this episode of The Cattle Call.